told you I was here, and then you faded away, and once more I was surrounded by a raging host of fiercely fighting men, and broke from them and fled. Fled wildly across endless stony wastes, over sand dunes, and across sodden, muddy, heavy fields. Stumbled and fell into pools and quagmires, and sunk down at last by the wayside. And again I heard you calling, and rushed blindly through the darkness seeking an old friend through the nightmare, new surroundings, and again I tried to give you a message of cheer, though, God FL knows, I wanted one myself. Again you faded, and once more I found myself wandering through the darkness, but though the guns played all around, the fighting, struggling spirits were further on. I sat down, and painfully tried to piece it all together. Where was I? Dead? Where was I? What was this wild, chaotic nightmare land? And I seemed to remember something that you had told me. The astral plane, that was it. Awful, was I in hell? The botch had said we were, but if I remembered you had said that the young, and especially those cut off suddenly passed, at any rate, to the astral plane. And then you came. I was aware of a friendly presence stealing slowly through the darkness. How slowly it seemed to come. Then, at length I saw you. You seemed different from the others. Less substantial in some ways, or was it more substantial? I can't say. One thing I did notice, that from you that trailed away a silver cord thin as a hair, but going clean out of sight. None of the others I had seen had that. How glad I was to see you, you know, and when you promised to bring H.J.L., I was thankful. If, as you doubtless know, the Englishman in the East feels his heart leap up when he hears his mother tongue, how much more so I, when I met at last, after all that age, someone I knew, and heard from him that, for a time at least, I should have a companion to help me on my way. When you had gone I felt an awful void, but still, I felt also a new hope, and when, after long waiting, you arrived once more with H.J.L., no words can say how thankful I was. Let me tell you that he, too, looks different from us, and also from you. I know that his astral body, which is assumed by him, is only kept together with considerable difficulty, and often he has to go away for a short time to renew it. His being here has made an enormous difference to me already. The dazed feeling has gone, and now I understand both what has happened and also the laws of this new world where, I suppose, I must make up my mind to dwell. H.J.L., I think we must stop now, for it is time Jack was returning. We can go on again next time. So we parted, and I went whirling through space till I found myself looking at my body, and then lost consciousness. Chapter 8, R.L.W. continues his narrative. June 12, 1916. When I came to the house where I had last seen H.J.L. and R.L.W., I found R.L.W. there but not H.J.L., and asked him where the latter was. He is trying to get into touch with the officer, but has not, as yet, found him. He left just after you did, and has not yet returned. I've been fearfully lonely without him, and hope he will soon return. W. Will. You might go on with your narrative, and perhaps he'll come. He has never yet failed to turn up for the interview with me on Monday. So R.L.W. began, after H.J.L. arrived, and you had gone. He started, now, Rex, you are on the astral plane. You are still partly material, though, as it were, refined matter the same as gas is compared to solid matter. The astral plane impinges on the earth plane, and partakes of its nature far more than the plane of the spirits in which I properly dwell. The astral plane corresponds fairly well to the idea of purgation, but the spirit plane contains what you know as hell, and also part of the lower heavens, but not the real high heavens. In the astral plane you will find that you are still subject to earth influences. It is usual to speak as if earth influences are all to the bad, but this is not so. Here you can redeem past failings by doing good on the earth plane, and cleanse your spirit of earthly lusts and faults, but also, of course, you can hanker after forbidden earthly pleasures and, in a dim mockery of a way, can enjoy them, but to your bane. Here you can commit further sins, and finally cause your soul to drop down into that part of the spirit plane which is properly called hell, and from thence it is far harder to climb than from this plane to the happy planes above. I said properly called hell, for there are parts of this astral plane which, to the superficial observer, appear very much like hell. Still, this will hardly surprise you, seeing even on earth itself are to be found very close imitations of hell. It is natural that where evil people congregate, there a condition will be found which approximates to hell. The thing you have to do is to shun such districts carefully and especially avoid people of an obviously evil nature. Those who suggest obsession and so forth are to be avoided at all costs. You know what obsession is, I perceive? L replied, yes, Jack explained that to me once rather fully. HJL continued, unfortunately your guide seems to have drifted rather far from you, but, doubtless, we shall rectify that in time. The first thing to do is to give you a chance of settling down among the new surroundings, and above all, to get your thoughts off the battlefield and such like scenes. So now, I'm going to isolate you from all this, indeed from the present world itself. Then we rose and started on a long and seemingly endless journey, amid a thick fog, and overshadowed by tumult and fear. Every now and then I caught a fleeting glimpse of the landscape, which steadily grew wilder and stranger. I passed over what appeared to be great ice fields and then through primeval forests, across tropic swamps, and on till life failed, till even the strange monsters of prehistoric times ceased, and a great silence settled on all. But you know this part quite well. Slowly this silence set into my brain. At times it was almost painful, and acted like a cauterizer, burning away the hideous tangle of shattered nerves. After a while this stage passed, and it began to act like a soothing balm. Gradually my whole being seemed to expand and drink it in, and my surroundings grew clearer and plainer. I realized that I was seated in the midst of a stony waste, where perpetual silence reigned. But look, here he comes. Chapter 9. The Officer Once More. As RLW spoke, the door opened and HJL entered, followed by the officer. I greeted HJL with delight, but when I saw the officer I could hardly recognize him. He was so changed. The hard cruel lines round the mouth had almost vanished. His eyes had new expression, a tender one almost, one might say, but there was no sign of weakness about the strong face. We shook hands warmly, and he began, "Well, since first we met I have been hard at work, and not without good results. Congenial work it is in a way, but we'll speak of that another time. Now to business. I am delighted to meet your brother and help him find his adjutant. I have no doubt we'll do it, and may as well start at once. What do you say to coming with us?" "Yes, I think I may as well. I don't want to leave R. just yet, after all, though I know he'd be in good hands, yet he'd feel a bit lonely. I don't pretend I'm very keen on the job, but that's all the better for me. Goodbye, Jack. I've hardly seen you this time, but the officer's always boiling over with energy. W. Shall I see you next Friday?" "Yes, one of us, though I can't as yet say which. Probably, in any case, R. will be there. RLW well, goodbye, Jack. What are you doing now, by the way?" I told him. "RLW good. Cheer up. You can tell the pater, if you like, that I'm getting on splendidly and..." "Private. JW goodbye, all of you," and they passed out through the door. I was left alone in the empty house, and suddenly felt very tired, so I lay down on a sofa and fell asleep and awoke on earth. Chapter 10, Rex completes his narrative. June 16, 1916. I felt myself whirling through space, amid clouds and mists, which gradually took the form of a landscape. Here I found myself on solid ground, and passed along a long, straight road running between fields which had no hedges on either side, but here and there a stray tree, generally a poplar, but not always. The road led me into a small French or Belgian town, and, passing along the high street, I stopped in front of the houses where I had met RLW before. On entering the house I found it empty and felt rather lost. After waiting some time, As it seemed, I was just about to go out again when RLW came in. "So you are here," he said. "I felt sure you were, and therefore returned. We have found the adjutant, but he is in rather a bad way just now, but soon, I expect, he'll be better. The officer and HJL are with him. J.W. You might resume your narrative where you left off on Monday. RLW very well, but I'll be quick over it. I told you how, after you had left me, H.J.L. resumed his explanations about this region, life here, or whatever words you choose to employ. He went on thus, as you are a young man, you will probably find that your astral form is a strong one, and will last for a considerable time. Therefore, you must prepare to stay here for a considerable period and, as it were, make it your home. Further, you will find that the earth pull is very strong, and you must resist it. Above all, you must resist any temptations to obtain the old pleasures by obsessing, and so forth. You will come across a fair number of beings who will try to lead you astray in this matter, just as on earth there are always plenty or people ready to show a man the shortest path to destruction, so be wary. Again, you have separated your guardian spirit from you by a one of misdeeds, and so forth, and your first work must be to dissolve that barrier by doing good deeds, and especially by helping people both on earth and here on this plane of existence. Not that I mean to imply that you have not any good deeds to your account. I know you have a great many, but what we want are more, and especially unselfish deeds. I mean that you should do things that you don't like for the sake of helping others, not merely doing things that your nature inclines you to do. Thus, you are by nature fond of children, and have many meritorious acts recorded on that score in your favor. What you need to do is to make a special effort, as it were, to level up that score in other directions. RLW then asked him, H.J.L., to explain the geography of the place. He replied, "All things that have material form have an astral form. To this plane come the astral forms." RLW, what do you mean that if I made a toy, and it was destroyed, I should find its astral form here? HJL, yes, and when you came onto the plane of pure form in the spirit plane you might find it there also, unless, indeed, it was so ugly or so badly made that it had gone to hell. RLW, then we are like God, who is said to create things. HJL, certainly, to create is godlike. Thus buildings which perish come here, and so to the plain above. Here come animals, and trees and flowers, rocks and landscapes, and so forth. RLW, but what is the difference of the forms or bodies, on the two planes? HJL, it is easy for me to know the difference, but not so easy to explain it, especially in the case of inanimate objects. Roughly, the form remains entangled in the astral body for some time after the astral body escapes from the material. This latter process on earth we call death. Here, in the astral plane, the astral body goes on, and is inhabited for some time by the soul which is enclosed in the spiritual body or form. In time, sooner or later, we shed our astral body. That is the best phrase to describe this second death. Then, freed from the astral body, the soul rises to the spirit plane, either to enter one of the three divisions of light, or sink to the realms of darkness called hell. From the divisions of light it passes through the great wall of fire, and then loses its mixed form. What happens after that I know not, but that is a long way off for both you and me. Now, when the form leaves the astral body, the latter continues to last often for a while, just as a corpse does. In some cases it breaks up almost at once, particularly in the cases of old men, whose astral bodies have become worn out like their physical ones. I am a case in point. I hardly realized I was on the astral plane before my astral body dissolved and I had passed on to the spirit plane. But often, in the case of a young man, he cannot get clear of his astral body. If he goes in for obsessing, however, his spiritual body seems to become too gross to remain in the astral body, and shatters it, and he drops down to hell. On the other hand, if he does a lot of good, his spirit form will shake itself clear of the astral body and rise to our plane. then that astral body, now an empty shell, may dissolve or may drift about aimlessly. I have known cases where a shell has hung around some old haunt of its earth life for several centuries. Many of the famous ghosts which haunt the country houses of Great Britain are of this nature, though not all by any means. But most of those aimless, purposeless ghosts, who simply turn up on certain anniversaries and do nothing in particular, belong to this group. As to animals, the highest types of animals, those closely associated with man, often attain to our realms, but the less human ones, as it were, seem to remain more or less permanent on the astral plane, for example lions and wolves, and most of the prehistoric creatures. I have carefully said more or less permanently, as I have not yet solved the problem as to whether, after a while, they return to Earth by the road of reincarnation, and so progress. I rather think some of them do, but that was one of the subjects I was studying when I broke it off to come and help you. As to the inanimate, as we call it on Earth, it is well to realize that everything has life, even to the tiniest atom, taking a house as an example, as soon as destroyed but not before, it comes to the astral plane. Here it remains for a long time, as a rule. So long as there are any astral beings on the astral plane who knew it on Earth, and recognize it, there it will remain. When there are no longer any such left, it fades away, and breaks up into astral elements, just as its material elements on Earth break up and fall back into the general mass of matter. From these astral elements, new astral forms are always being built up. This remark would naturally lead me to speak of those astral beings who were never on Earth. But I've already told Jack about that, and I'll tell you at another time. The form of a building, on the other hand, goes straight to the realm of form, and from there, so far as I can discover, remains forever. According to its beauty, it will go to the realms of light and to the various divisions of them, or to hell. Even a building partly built will come to that realm. Thus, Westminster Abbey may be seen in the various stages of its development. Thus also on the astral plane and on the spirit plane, one may see the same building to alley appearances. All the astral form is temporary, and the spirit form is fixed and permanent. It's wonderfully interesting, I, R.L.W., said, and I can see I have a vast deal to learn. Then R.L.W. broke off. See Jack, here's H.J.L. H.J.L. entered and said, Rex, I think you had better come back with me now and see what can be done with your adjutant. Before you go, Rex, I cried, I want to ask you one or two things about Father's dream. He says he saw you with two women, and he asked Mother, in the dream, if she saw you, but she said she didn't. He described the chairs and furniture pretty accurately, but I can't square the rest with what I've seen here. R.L.W. neither can I. He told me he was glad to have found me at last, and would tell Mother. What is more, he went and tried to bring Mother's astral body here to see me, but could not, because it was too entangled with her physical body. But he came back and said he thought she understood, though he did not suppose she would remember anything when she awoke. As to the two women, H.J.L. was there and spoke to him, but he was so excited at seeing me that he hardly noticed him, H.J.L. H.J.L. people carry away fearfully distorted ideas. But now goodbye, Jack, and they faded away in the distance. J.W. Chapter 11, My Journey Through the Storm. June 19, 1916. I saw my body lying fast asleep, and then the room faded, and around me swept chaos. Clouds of darkness seemed to break over me like great, black waves from a stormy sea. I heard the roar of the wind, the crash of the thunder. All around me the lightning played in lurid sheets of flame. I felt like a piece of thistledown, tossed to and fro, wither and thither. At times I thought hell should never cease falling. At others I was thrown up, up, an immeasurable height. At length I seemed to be cast upon something solid, as it were, and struggled away from the waves of darkness into a district more sheltered, between bare hills. As I penetrated further into the country, the storm seemed to grow less. My own pace increased. I ceased to walk and began to fly. Gradually the landscape became less forbidding, and the storm ceased altogether. Soon I saw the village, and then entered the house where X dwelt. This time he was there waiting for me. "What an awful storm, Rex," I said. "I've never been through so bad a one before, never experienced anything like it before on my journeys here. What's the cause of it?" H. J. L., who was sitting near Rex, answered for him. "All the outer edge of the astral plane is in that state now, owing to the fierce fighting that's going on, especially on the eastern front. The passions thereby aroused are visible here, and affect the astral fluids and elements among which we are dwelling, just as the winds on Earth are caused by fluctuations of heat and cold, and by electric discharges. I wonder you haven't noticed it before." JWL, "Of course, when I first came seeking Rex I experienced a kind of storm, but it was rather like a thunderstorm on land, whereas this was like being in a storm at sea and in the water too." HJL, "The storm on land, as you call it, as I explained, was really, in the main, the astral form of the actual fighting which is going on between the astral or if you like, ghostly armies here. The flashes of light were from the astral cannon and the thunder the roar of that cannon, but what you experienced just now were the effects of the fierce storm of hate now raging upon the subtle elements of which the astral plane is composed. The thing that puzzles one, though, is why you have never experienced it before." HJL remained silent for a moment, as if turning the matter over in his mind. I turned to Rex. Chapter 12, The Requiem. JW, can you give me any more of your narrative? RLW, there's not much more to tell. I told you before that I saw, amid the very battle itself, I mean the astral battle first, a great light like a searchlight coming right up through the ground. It seemed to dissolve the fighting horde and the very ground itself, as if a great funnel had flopened down which I could look. There I saw the service, you and father, and the people in the church, and also a great crowd of spirit forms, many of them very beautiful, and as if made of light. Strangely enough, the idea that immediately struck me was that here I saw the communion of saints. Anyway, the service did me more good than any other service I've ever attended. It soothed my troubled spirit and gave me hope. I wonder how many services ever have any effect anywhere, I mean, how far till they reach even to this plane, much less onto the spirit planes. What do you think, uncle? HJL replied, very few, in my opinion, get any further than the church they are in. It all turns on the mental efforts of the worshippers, and how far they unite with one common object. Moreover, a short prayer will get through, though the full service does not. I have seen examples of that, but I've seen very few of such services coming through even as far as us. The most usual type is a service for the dead, generally for some special person. See, there's one coming through now. As I watched, I saw a beam of light some distance off. It grew and expanded into a great glory. It was of an exquisite golden color. I'm going to investigate, I cried, and shot through the door. I soon reached the end of the village, and out into the country. Then I stood at the edge of a pit, up which the light came, and floating in the mouth of the pit was a French soldier. Beneath him I could see the roof of a church, and in the church a requiem was being celebrated. Just a priest, a few old folks, that was all, but the spirits of light were there in a great number. I suddenly felt that I was intruding, and hurried back to HJL and Rex. Rex continued, quietly. Well, besides that, I've little to tell. You know of our journey back and how we've taken up our residence here. HJL has explained and amplified what he had already told me. Since we started on our search for my adjutant, we've had little time for talking. We found him still fighting fiercely, and you should have seen the look of astonishment on his face when he saw me. It made me laugh for the first time since I died. Amid the turmoil, it was impossible to go into things, but after some little difficulty I got him out of the fighting line. He thought, at first, he would be running away from the battle, and it was only my presence which made him realize that he must be dead. He said, "Weel, if I can talk with you, I must be dead, for I know quite well you are. But it all seems a fearful jumble up." Somehow, we got him away, and the officer took him firmly in hand, and I and H.J.L. went with him. We took him way behind the fighting line, and there he is now, and we three are doing for him the work that H.J.L. did for me. Only we have not, as yet, taken him into the great solitude. I don't know whether it will be necessary in his case. The officer has a tremendous personality. He simply says a thing, and you feel at once that he's right, without troubling to analyze it. But we've been away long enough and must go back to him. Give my love to Pater and B. Was she upset when she heard I'd been killed? J. W. Very. And I told him what she had said. RLW dear little B. Remember me to C. H.J.L. in which I'll join. Now we must be off. We passed out together, but whereas they turned one way, I felt drawn in another. Again I found myself dropping down, down, through raging storm clouds or waves, until at length I touched ground, and hurrying along, as it were on the bed of the sea, found myself passing along a road near London, and so down the empty Finchley Road, up Willafald Way, straight through the door of my house. Upstairs I went through the door of the bedroom, stood gazing at my sleeping form, and then lost consciousness. Chapter 13, The Adjutant. June 23, 1916. On reaching the now familiar house, I found quite a large party. Besides Rex, I found H.J.L., the officer, and a stranger whom Rex introduced as his adjutant. The latter at once said, "Adjective well, this is another surprise. I'm getting them every hour now. To be able to talk to a living man in this land of shadows. How goes the war? Do you know anything of the old regiment? Has our offensive started?" J.W. The Russians have completely shattered the southern half of the Austro-German line. They claim to have captured 200,000 prisoners. Czernowitz has fallen. A place called Luck, and practically all Bukovina has been conquered. The Germans to the north made a counterattack to save the situation, but it seems to have failed. I gave him further details of the position of affairs. Adjective: how on earth did they do it? J. W. They've got a tremendous amount of heavy guns, mostly, I believe, from Japan. She's been putting all her energies into supply Russia with that sort of help. Adjective: excellent. I say, this has cheered me up a lot. When you come back next time, you'll bring me some more news, won't you? J. W. Of course, I shall be delighted. But while you naturally want to know how England's doing, don't concentrate on that idea too much, or you will become hopelessly earthbound. Adjective: what does that mean? I explained briefly, and then went on to Rex. How have you been getting on since last I saw you? RLW famously. The officer took the adjutant away for some time into the place of utter silence. How long you would reckon it, I don't know. Time is measured differently here. Indeed, if it were not for your periodic visits, I should have by now quite forgotten about Earth time. Reckoning by that, I should think he was away for about 3 days. I called your visits periodic. I do that because you have explained to me that you visit me every Monday and Friday, but the intervals between seem to vary in length enormously. While the officer was away with the adjutant, H.J.L. went on instructing me. He has been trying to make my mouth water by telling me about the fine plays and splendid concerts they have in his sphere. Also, he has explained about the great art and all the rest of it. It all sounds very attractive, but unfortunately, rather a long way off. He does not seem very hopeful about my finding such things here, and is very emphatic that I shan't find them in the place below. By this he meant hell. One thing I don't much care about is, there don't seem to be many children in his part. Chapter 14, The Fate of the Children. H.J.L. interrupting, that is because, being an old man, I have not been associated with children much just before I died. But, all the same, I've come across a good number in my division. Furthermore, you must bear in mind that there were children not according to our years but according to our spiritual development. I was quite a small boy when first I started there. On the other hand, many half-grown children would appear there to be as old, or older, than I did then. A man, if he does not grow, shrinks in spiritual stature. If you arrived there now, you would not be a man amusing children, as you imagine, but a very small child yourself, who would have to go to school, and would, I fancy, be found a very backward and stupid pupil.